Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. This week on the HR Power Hour, we have two separate half-hour shows. The first half-hour segment is our special edition of the HR Power Hour as we finish our four-part series with an in-depth interview of each of the four gubernatorial candidates of the great state of Maine. These interviews have been designed to be a positive conversation with the candidates where we focus on real issues and concerns that business leaders, HR professionals, and employees care about today. Please note the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the candidates on this show are those of the candidate and not necessarily those of the HR Power Hour radio show, its ownership, sponsors, or Atlantic Coast Radio. The content of this show has not been approved, and each candidate is solely responsible for his or her content. Their appearance does not constitute an endorsement. Our last candidate is current Attorney General Janet Mills, Democratic gubernatorial candidate. According to her website, janetmills.com, Janet Mills will fight to see that every Maine person has affordable, high-quality health care, that Maine has a strong economy with good-paying jobs in every part of the state. Janet graciously pre-recorded her half-hour appearance during the primary, and I'm looking forward to hearing again her vision for the next 4 years. The second half-hour segment of the HR Power Hour is going to be Brooks Fino. Brooks is the author of Corporate Diversification, Opportunities Created by the Winds of Change. Change is a constant, and some organizations and leaders understand and react better than others. Listen to Brooks and your host, David Chulo, discuss real-life examples of corporations that have succeeded in remaking or changing themselves with lessons that everyone can learn from. So first, let's start with our interview with Attorney General Janet Mills. Welcome, Attorney General Janet Mills.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
Oh, I'm excited to have you on. This is great. You know, I've watched your career over the years. You're obviously doing very well. Why would you run for governor?
Why not? Why not? I feel like I know how to turn things around. I know how state government works. Some people think that's a bad thing. I happen to think it's a good thing to know how to make change and effectuate, you know, affect good public policy. I spent 4 years on the Appropriations Committee, which none of the other Democrat candidates have done. And those were four tough years because it was during the recession of 2008 and around that time. And we had to, you know, work across the aisle with Republicans and forge seven budgets in 4 years. I used to kiddingly call it the de-appropriations committee because we were always trying to, you know, cut in a fashion that would still preserve education funding, still preserve the basic social safety net of government and preserve some good programs, but, you know, making a lot of de-appropriations. So I have that experience. I have run an executive agency with a $42 million budget. I know how to make state government work.
You know, I think it's fair to say that Maine's economy has certainly improved over the last 4 years. Job growth mm-hmm. has been strong, unemployment's at 2.7%. Tax revenue is also strong, especially on the business side, and Mainers' consumer confidence is nearing a high. Should we change course in what we're doing and why?
Well, we do change course because although we have a low unemployment rate, I run into people every day who are working two and three part-time jobs just to get by. So it seems like whether it's the wages or the cost of living or a combination of both, people are not seeing their goals achieved. They're not feeling better about the economy. Whereas unemployment rates in Washington County, Somerset, Piscataquis are not satisfactory, and people are having a hard time finding good jobs, good-paying jobs. One of the issues is cost of living, and that involves energy costs, transportation costs, electricity, and health care. Health care is a big cost driver for employers and workers alike. So that's something we think we've got to address. But we have a lot of challenges. I mean, there have been some changes for the better and changes for the worse. But we've got to encourage people to come here, to for new businesses to locate here, and existing businesses to remain here. That means improving infrastructure and attracting young workers from wherever they may come. What I hear from employers is that they don't have the workforce they need, you know, especially in areas with high unemployment. We need more software engineers. We need more electrical engineers. We need more people in the trades.
And we're talking today with Attorney General of Maine, Janet Mills, who is running as Democratic candidate for governor. I'm your host, David Chulo. You know, companies must compete today. And whether real or perceived, the shortage of tech-savvy people has affected the way companies do business. Mm-hmm. This is a hiring challenge for the state. Some say the reason is that there's a skills gap. Others say that, you know, certainly the current older workforce, which is a large percent of the workforce here in Maine, mm-hmm. is a problem. But also there's questions about the fact that, young workers are leaving the state.
Mm-hmm.
What do you expect to do over the next 4 years if elected governor? What do you and your administration really expect to do to solve this problem in 4 years?
Well, a couple of things. One is, three things on the economy. One is infrastructure. One is, and the other is research and development. And the third is education. Those three things, I think, combine to produce a good economy. When I talk about infrastructure, I don't mean just roads and bridges, although they're in dire need of help. You know, we haven't built any new roads in 7 or 8 years, and there are a lot in need of repair. Infrastructure is important to employers and people moving here, and not only infrastructure in rock and dirt stuff, but and bridges, but cell phone service and broadband. I think it's kind of ridiculous that we are in a state where if you drive from the state's largest city to the state's capital or back on one of the busiest highways in the state, you drop a call right at mile 47. Always you drop a call on the state's busiest highway. That's got to be addressed. I mean, cell phone service shouldn't be that sketchy and intermittent. And broadband, most employers and new employers and small businesses looking to locate here are looking for good Internet service. We don't have really a statewide strategy for broadband, and that's critical as well. I have friends who practice tax law on Deer Isle. They came back to Maine to raise their family here, but their biggest challenge is not having good Internet service. It's a hodgepodge of things. So I asked them, well, when you have a file to get back to your clients in Delaware, what do you do? You know what they said? Well, if it's an important file, we'll drive over to the Dunkin' Donuts in Blue Hill and sit outside and use their Wi-Fi and mail it that way, send it that way. That's not acceptable. We've got to do a better job strategizing about good Internet service in all communities. That's critical to business. It's critical to education, for kids to do their homework online, or health care. Wouldn't it be great to allow seniors to stay in their homes by having telehealth connected to their homes so that their primary care physician or their hospital can take their blood pressure and vital signs over the phone or over the Internet with high-speed broadband? These are all critical things for infrastructure. Secondly, research and development. We're, I think, 37th in the nation in the amount we spend, percentage of money we spend on research and development out of the gross domestic product. We need to do more that way. We've got tremendous veterinary medicine facilities in Maine, and we could be, you know, veterinarian biopharmaceutical capital of the world. We, between IDEX and Vets First Choice and what they're doing at Jackson Labs, and MDI and biological labs, we could be number one in the world in that area. We need to improve research and development, encourage what's going on in at the Advanced Structures and Composites program at Orono, and support that fully. They're inventing new ways of using cross-laminated timbers for construction, for, you know, maybe telephone poles and that kind of thing. We've got a lot of offshoot businesses that are existing off of that research, and we could do more that way, marketing those great products that they're producing in Orono. And thirdly, education. I think when young families move here, they want to have a good education, public education system. That's one of our competitive advantages. We have a pretty good competitive education system, but we need a cradle-to-college strategy, starting with Head Start only, and more computer sciences, and I think that's critical for workforce needs, for employers. They're looking for people who have technology skills. I would support having computer sciences in the middle schools. We don't have enough of them in the high schools yet, but middle school curricula, including computer sciences, led by, you know, training from the state, state level, and expanding computer curricula, computer coding, computer programming. And these are the jobs of the present, not the future.
Janet, you know, it's interesting. You're right. Certainly there are a lot of areas where we have to look at the middle schools, the high schools, the education system. But the real question today is the need is now. The need is right now for employers. You have an economy that's going really strong. You've got employers screaming because we can't find workers. You have employers really concerned because the job market is so tight that there are businesses here in the state that can't open for the season because they can't find workers. So what you're talking about is absolutely correct from a long-term perspective, and agree that things need to be done. What in the next 4 years, in the next year, heck, with the 4 years, what in the next year can be done to really solve this problem?
Well, two things that are fairly controversial. One is we've got to welcome new Mainers. You know, there are people coming to this country, and I don't care what their religion is, but they, I think we should welcome them here. Something like 40% of the new Mainers, new immigrants in the Portland area alone, have bachelor's degrees or better. The fact is they bring good job skills. What we're lacking there is better English language training, enhanced adult education. I understand from some folks that there's a two-year waiting list for some of the adult ed programs to teach people to speak English. And secondly, certifications, matching their licenses and certifications and qualifications in their home country with what we have here and see if they can become compatible. So there's those things, certification of licensing compatibility and English language issues. That could be done. Secondly, the second controversial issue is the opiate epidemic. I hear from employers everywhere that they're concerned about the workforce being competent and adequate. The people who do apply for jobs, the employers want to know that they're not doing drugs on the job, that they're not coming to work stoned. We're not taking heroin, and you know it's a tough issue. There's a real addiction problem out there, and we got to address that. And I have a whole plan to address the opiate epidemic on day one, and that involves having substance abuse counselors and recovery coaches on call, having medication assisted treatment, getting involved in prevention and education and treatment in a much bigger way. So those things I think employers would appreciate and would help expand the workforce. Their benefit.
And we're talking today with Attorney General of Maine, Janet Mills, who is running as Democratic candidate for governor. Employers are certainly concerned with the impending recreational legalization of marijuana here in the state of Maine. Certainly when you just mentioned about the opioid epidemic is certainly an issue that is out there already. We know it's a violation of federal law, and there's no question about that, but yet the state continues to move forward, and the voters decided to make that work. What is your position on this topic, and how do you see vetting this issue and dealing with the employer issues you, A, talked about? One, you know, how do we deal with these issues? How do we deal with the classes of people that are federal employees that have to be treated differently, or DOT employees that have to be treated differently? How does that all work in your administration?
Oh, boy. It's not uncomplicated, as you know. look, I'm not opposed to recreational marijuana. I think in the area of marijuana, you've got to do three things. You got to test it, track it, and tax it. And in the new law that was passed over the governor's veto, I believe there are different employment provisions than what used to be in the law. So I'm pleased that they've been trying to address that. I think they're saying now that an employer is not required to accommodate the use of marijuana in the workplace. That's good news. Secondly, an employer may enact or adopt workplace policy restricting the use of marijuana by employees in the workplace or, you know, engaged in activities in the scope of employment. And an employer may discipline employees who are under the influence of marijuana in the workplace. So those three things are, I think, an improvement on the prior law. And what's difficult is to tell when somebody's actually under the influence. You know, there's no actual legal standard for driving under the influence in Maine.
Yes.
Under the influence of marijuana. And that's really been a bone of contention. I know the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee debated that for months and came up with basically nothing, no way to determine if somebody's under the influence of marijuana while they're driving a vehicle. Now, if an employer has a federal contract to boot, obviously there are other federal ramifications, and they are not allowed to have marijuana use in the workplace in any event. And a lot of employers have federal contracts, so they need to consult with legal counsel on what they can and can't do in the workplace within the ramifications of the new law.
And we're talking today with Attorney General Janet Mills, who is running as a Democratic candidate for governor. I'm your host, David Chulo. I want to switch gears in terms of the other issue having to do with minimum wage. The voters of the state of Maine voted to continue to increase the minimum wage virtually every year for the next few years. It's currently $10 an hour, and some say it's going to go up to 15, maybe 20, or even higher. What's your position on the minimum wage versus the living wage? And do you really think that, for example, a high school individual at 14 years old entering the workforce should be paid $15 or $20 an hour to start at a job from a part-time job working at, for example, an ice cream shop?
Well, you know, the people have voted on the minimum wage, and I got a pretty substantial vote at the polls. And I would not favor changing that at this point. I think the law requires it to go up to, and for annual increases, up to $12 an hour in 2020, and annual cost of living increases thereafter. I think the more interesting issue, the living wage you mentioned, is a more interesting issue, because what a living wage may be in Portland is maybe quite different than a living wage in Fort Fairfield or
You're exactly
Waterville.
Right. That's the challenge, you know, isn't it? Yeah.
The prevailing wage is one of the criteria used in state contracts. Prevailing wage of the area, labor, statistical marketing area, and metropolitan area. And that's a different issue, and that's required by state law for state contractors. And I think in the essential programs and services model for education funding, there's also a regional cost of living adjustment in the teachers' wages, part of ESP, essential programs and services, EPS, sorry. So you got to look at things regionally to some extent. I would oppose changing what's in the law now. I think the people have voted, the people have spoken. I would not want to roll back that measure. That sends a bad signal.
Portland is looking to potentially have a paid sick time ordinance.
Yes.
That has certainly been out there. It's in other states, and it's been talked about. Do you support that? And if you do, why? Or if you don't, why not?
You know, it takes a village, as they say. And Portland's got its own issues. I think that statewide, we need to look at paid family leave. In four other states, it's been done. It's been enacted without burdening the employer. And I want to look at that a lot more deeply, but I think we've got to look at paid family leave as an employer-friendly proposal for employers of a certain size. And I can't tell you right now how many employees that might be, but I think of employers of a sizable nature, they need to accommodate family leave and paid family leave. And we can do that by looking at other states, what Rhode Island and other states have done. And I think they have funded it on the basis of employee taxes of some sort, employee contributions that build up and support, sort of like a health savings account in some states, build up the money to be able to take a paid leave when a family emergency arises. I mean, a huge percentage of Maine people are now or have recently been caregivers for either elderly adults or small children or disabled individuals in their family. We've got to accommodate their needs and allow them to stay in the workforce, the private workforce, and also be able to take care of families in dire needs. You know, if you have an hourly position in particular, it's really tough to take time off. And to have it unpaid, especially for low-wage workers, it's really a disaster for the family.
And we're talking today with Attorney General Janet Mills. You know, you mentioned a little bit about health care, and I think that's certainly a huge concern from an employer and an employee perspective here in the state. You know, costs continue to go up. You know, I'll give an example. You know, I own a business here in Portland. I own two. And,
yeah.
You know, I did a comparison analysis that if I moved my business to New Hampshire and bought the exact same health care plan, exact same, no different, the cost would be almost 30% less to buy it in New Hampshire than I would in Maine. How do we deal with that issue here in the state? And how do we deal with the issue with allowing potentially plans being bought outside state lines, or now they're talking about association plans. So why would you address this critical issue? Because it's a real serious cost issue for employers and employees, I'll add, and employees.
Yeah. So going to the broader picture, employment-based health insurance goes back to the 1940s during World War II, when President Roosevelt imposed a wage and price freeze during the war. It caused a lot of hackles to go up, and as compensation, he promised the workforce that they could negotiate over health care and that employers would get tax benefits for providing health insurance in the workplace. Now, fundamentally, we're just about the only civilized country, the only country in the world that where your health insurance, your availability of health care depends on your employment. That's a fundamental premise that needs to be addressed at the national level. It doesn't seem fair to me to burden employers and employees and to limit mobility of the workforce by the restrictions of your health insurance. So that's something that has to be dealt with on the national level. Many of us in the Democratic primary are talking about single-payer or universal health care as a goal. Pretty difficult to do it in one state alone. Vermont tried to do single-payer health insurance. They found it impossible. So we've got to be talking to other states about expanding health care services and controlling costs as well. I think that when we look at the cost of pharmaceutical prescription drugs, just skyrocketed. We need to address that on the state level and the national level. So controlling costs and expanding access to health care. Right now, with Medicaid expansion, there'll be something, an estimated 70,000 people additionally eligible for Medicaid, main care. And then the level above that, the income level above that, many are qualified for the Affordable Care Act benefits. But there are small businesses and individuals who are buying insurance on the open market that are really, really getting taken for a ride there. Their premiums are just out of sight. That's the group I'd like to focus on and see what we can do to pool insurance, to offer them some kind of subsidy or benefit to allow them to buy into a pool of health insurance coverage. Those people are being crippled right now with health insurance costs.
And we're talking today with Attorney General Janet Mills, who is running as a Democratic candidate for governor. I'm your host, David Chulo. So one of the major issues, of course, is I've never met anybody that says they want to pay more in taxes. No employer I've ever met said, hey, let's go pay some more in taxes, right? No business owner has ever said, I want to pay more in taxes. But there is an issue in terms of the cost of living here in Maine. And I can give you a quick example. We've moved people from out of state as recruiters and move them to the state of Maine. They're amazed at the cost of living, especially in the Portland area, is very similar to the cost in Boston, but the wages are certainly not the same. How do we deal with the fact of our tax structure here in the state at a high level? And what are you going to talk about in the next 4 years to change to make those better?
Oh, great question. Well, you know, the tax structure involves a whole lot of things. I've talked with a lot of employers in Maine. They're complaining more, and individuals are complaining more about the property taxes. And I think some of the income tax reductions that the current administration has affected, have shifted the taxes onto property taxpayers. And that's the focus right now, I think. Giving Maine residents a benefit for through the circuit breaker program, for instance, we can enhance the circuit breaker program. We could, again, fund revenue sharing so the towns aren't starving for revenues from the state in order to, especially the service centers that don't have enough of a property tax base. So revenue sharing, education funding from the state needs to fulfill its commitment to 55% of education funding. So those measures will help reduce the burden on the property taxes. Income taxes, you know, we have about $140 million in surplus right now, so we need to analyze where that's coming from and where it should be going. Should it stay in the stabilization fund? How much of it should stay in the stabilization fund? Where else are we not taking advantage of federal funds that we could be using as revenues for good programs, like in public health and education and environmental regulation, that kind of thing?
As we wrap up the show today, and again, we're talking with Attorney General of Maine, Janet Mills, who's running as a Democratic candidate for governor. Why should somebody vote for you?
I think I'm the most qualified person for the job. If I were applying for a job in one of your businesses, I think you'd hire me. I think you would. And any of your clients would probably hire me because I've got the qualifications. And I've got more. I suggest I'm the most qualified person for the job. I've run an executive agency with a $42 million budget. I've been in the private sector for 14 years in a small business and representing individuals and other small businesses in Western Maine. I've had experience on the Appropriations Committee, getting budgets done. I know how to do that. I know the sources of funding. I know the personnel issues. And fundamentally, I just want to be the biggest cheerleader for the state of Maine. I want to tell the world what a great place we are, what great people we have, what a great work ethic, and what great natural resources. I think, you know, they'll come here if they hear the right song from the leadership in Augusta. And we need new leadership, and I plan to be that new leader and to tell the world what a great state we have and welcome businesses here and welcome the new workforce here to contribute to our state's economy and make everyone better off. I see a state, my vision is of a state undivided, not north and south, first district, second district, a state undivided that's prosperous north to south and west to east. That's my vision of the state. I'm the only Democrat running from the second congressional district, and I think I can bring people together and get the job done.
Janet, it has been a pleasure having you on today, the HR Power Hour. I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Dave.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
It's 3 p.m., and you just ran out of ink. You have a report due end of day, which is 2 hours from now. You can't push the deadline because end of day means end of today, not end of tomorrow day. What now? Go to your local Staples store. Staples now has an even bigger selection of HP ink and toner. In store, in stock, and at low prices every day. So you can get your ink fast for less. End of story.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsinME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsinME.com. That's JobsinME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
Life's never perfect, but as realtors, we know living it in the perfect place can make a big difference.
Imagine
hiding from your screeching children in that spacious walk-in closet, watching the neighbor's dog poop on the freshly sodded grass you negotiated during closing, dropping your cell phone in the toilet of the spa-like five-piece bathroom again. So get the perfect place to house all of life's imperfections. Get Realtor. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Hi, this is Derek Volk, host of The Derek Volk Show. I want to tell you about my book, Chasing the Rabbit, A Dad's Life Raising a Son on the Spectrum. My book is a rare and emotionally truthful story of my experiences as a father raising a son on the autism spectrum. When Dylan was 2 years old, my wife sat me down and said, "Something's not quite right with Dylan." My book takes you from birth to that day at age two, until he was diagnosed with autism 6 years later, and then through his extremely rocky middle school years, his volatile high school life, and his challenging path to adulthood. The story has been called extremely raw and shockingly honest, and has been given 5 stars by every review on Amazon. Please go to our website, chasingtherabbit.org, to learn more about our story. That's Chasing the Rabbit, jacksonlewis.org.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Our second guest today in the second half-hour segment is Brooks Fino. He is the author of Corporate Diversification, Opportunities Created by Winds of Change. Brooks, welcome to the show.
Well, welcome to you as well. Glad to join all of you.
Well, no, we appreciate you coming on today. You know, there is no question that the climate of change today is crazy. It's accelerating at a rate we've never seen with technology, with just everything, even personal growth. Time is of the essence. What made you decide to write this book?
Well, first of all, there's a need for a book like this. There's no other published book that deals directly with a small to medium-sized manufacturing and service companies dealing with the environment in which we face that you just mentioned of change. Sooner or later, every company of growth-minded orientation is going to face the option of considering diversification into new products and new markets. And that's where this book and my approach comes in handy, because there's no real manual on what some of the options and opportunities are to expand through change and diversification.
You know, change is sometimes a scary word, Brooks. You know, people sometimes get very nervous when they're changing their anything, let alone, you know, especially when it comes to work. Why do you think it is that people are so afraid of change?
Well, first of all, change comes about for two reasons. And it's important to underscore those two. First is that people are uncomfortable with the way in which people are adapting. And the second is that they see opportunities so particularly favorable by changing that they will then instigate a change. But those are kind of the two ground rules, because as you point out, people aren't really anxious to change. However, they are changing. But they prefer not to face up to that reality.
And change sometimes, when it's sporadic or, you know, if you want to call it, with no process, can really have disruption in production. It has disruption in the workplace. It has disruption with people's feelings and how they feel about the organization. Well, how have you seen change affect the manufacturing segment?
Well, I think change varies depending upon the environment. We as individuals change, and I liken the analogy of the fact that we're sort of polar bears standing on an ice floe. And while everything looks quite sanguine around us, we are actually floating in a direction of the current. Now, not only are we changing, but the things that we see, if we're involved in active lifestyle, are changing rapidly around us. Some of them are changing faster than others. For example, we've seen rapid change in automobiles, but not so much in the basic automobile as in the electronics that goes into the automobile. So depending on where you look, there is a different rate of change, but it's all around us and involving everything we do.
You're correct. It's certainly there are elements of life that are changing faster than others. When you wrote this book and looked at corporate diversification, what are the things that you found were the key elements of these corporate growths and change?
Well, I think the first key element starts with the desire of the
principal of the particular business, whether it be a manufacturing or a service company, and a desire for them to face up to change and the opportunities surrounding it. Now, we look at it either as riding on the crest of a wave or being behind the wave. If you want to stay on the crest of a wave, you've got to be out front in terms of what your environment is from a business standpoint, whether it be a restaurant or whether it be a service company or whether it be a manufacturing company. You've got to stay out ahead of the change, and that's the important element thereof.
You say in the preface of your book, this book represents my compendium of 50 years of work experience involved with primarily private-owned businesses and enriched by my personal marketing exposure in the field of sales, advertising, and market research firms of various size and types. Give us a little bit about your background.
Well, I've had a very fortunate opportunity to be involved in many businesses from the inside in terms of helping them look at new products or new markets primarily. And I have extended my opportunities to go from Europe, where I was employed for a period of my life with a corporation, but from a consulting standpoint, from Germany all the way to China and spots in between. So I've had an opportunity to experience environmental diversification worldwide.
And what was the one thing that you noticed globally about the challenge of change?
I think it affects everyone in one degree or another, depending on the location. Some geographic areas are more adapted to change. For example, when I was doing business in Russia, they are very slow to adapt to some of the technological innovations that are common to our country. But that depends upon the field. In the military field, they've adapted much better than they have in the consumer products line. And in China, you're seeing now a very rapid adaptation to some of the ideas that we're offering. And this has caused us some problems in our trade relationship with China. So it depends geographically on the nature of the economy and the leadership thereof.
You know, you talk about an example of the libraries, right? Community resource centers. And I'm going to be one to acknowledge that there was a point I thought libraries were going away. Right? I mean, I thought they were just going to be done. And yet they've seemed to adapt. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I've put together a program for lectures at libraries, which is very relevant to what I do, which involves a PowerPoint presentation illustrating that libraries originally, as you point out, as we grew up, at least as I grew up as a child, a library was a place you would go and visit to check out a book or perhaps do some studying or reading in the library itself. And that part has shifted by necessity. And the library has become much more of a civic center, exercising the needs of people who wish to speak, whether it be authors or programs, civic programs or business programs. They have a central location which is receptive to the community for them to convey their messages. And so you have all sorts of types of programs now that are conducted in the libraries, ranging from the computerization of books and on down to theatrical and singing productions being performed within the confines of the library space.
We're talking with Brooks Fino. He is an author of the book Corporate Diversifications, Opportunities Created by the Winds of Change, and we appreciate him being on the show today. You know, Brooke, again in your book, you say this book addresses the why should, the what are, and the how to of pursuing diverse growth opportunities through optimally intermixing an array of ingredients based primarily on the pursuit of market strategies and products or services. Take me through the book a little. Take me and explain to me the flow of how this book explains that process.
Well, the first part of the book, if I were to divide it into kind of three parts, the first part of the book explains diversification and what it means and how it works. And part of that explanation goes through the range of diversification. And I start with what I define as a tweet. And a tweet is a little bit of a change in the corporation, or it could be a personal change, too. For example, a tweet would be simply changing your message on your answering machine. That could be a kind of a thing that you could do on an almost daily basis. Or a message in your advertising, or a new package design. Some small change that keeps you moving forward on the edge of the wave of change. The next one gets up to getting into new products or new services. And those have an element of risk. They're also a larger component of diversification. And new products fit very nicely, or new services, into the current market, and they're fairly easy to introduce from the standpoint of risk, comparatively. They are being sold to a marketplace that you're familiar with, and you may be increasing the price of your product or adding a new product or making some kind of a configuration change. Then you get into the more difficult areas of new markets. And the new market can become more complicated by virtue of the fact that you're entering a field in which you're an unknown. And the most common new market for us in the East Coast, anyway, is to sell over into Europe. But I've gone, as I mentioned in my book, I've taken some objects such as snow plows and sold them into different geographic areas of the country on behalf of my clients. And so that's a major next step. And as kind of an aside, I was instrumental in helping, and I guess this is a combination of a new product and a new market, in getting the metal lobster trap involved in use by lobstermen. That's kind of a new product, but into sort of the same marketplace. And then you go from there into the next extreme of making an acquisition, which is a whole new risk concept, and it's very hard to find an attractive opportunity thereof. But that's kind of the end of the first stage of my growth in the book. And then the next part of the book involves examples of companies that are doing all of these things, tweaking, getting into new products and new markets. And these are actual practical examples with corporate names of firms that do this and have done this with varying degrees of success, and some of the reasons thereof of why it worked out well or didn't. And the final section of the book involves focusing on some of the do's and don'ts that are associated with successful introduction of new products and things to look out for in terms of planning, personnel, and following up. And I think that's very important, because the better the planning is around the diversification, the less the risk factor is and the more effectively it develops.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. I'm your host, David Chulo. And today we're talking with Brooks Fino. He's the author of Corporate Diversification: Opportunities Created by the Winds of Change. Brooks, I have your book right in my hand today by Archway Publishing. I got to tell you, it's nice. You've done a nice job with this book.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's got a good hand to it. It's easy reading, yet it's full of information, which I think is exactly what HR professionals and business leaders will need. You know, one of the examples in the book you bring up is Dunkin' Donuts as a corporate example. And I think this illustrates a very strong example of what you're talking about. So I'm going to let you tell the story. Tell us exactly some of the tips people can take away from that. And so I'd love to hear it. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, I think that a service company like Dunkin' Donuts is in a better position to make changes than perhaps the manufacturing company. Now, Dunkin' Donuts has come on the scene a number of years back as a purveyor of primarily donuts and obviously coffee, and has become very entrenched in the American mind as a basic purveyor of a substance that is commonly used. Now, Dunkin' Donuts has switched its position in terms of adding various different kinds of products, of food products, to its mix over the years. And it has now provides sandwiches of different types donut as well as donuts. And more recently, and I think of particularly noteworthy, is that they have made a switch, which is very symbolic, by eliminating the word donut as they move from a strategic point of view to adapt to the market of what they really do, which is providing various different food products. And they have also followed the trend of providing a full array of food during the course of the day to not only support their original thrust, which was breakfasts, but on to noontime and late afternoon sources of sustenance. And so I think that's a good example of how a firm evolves over time to fit the needs of the marketplace and obviously to compete with its rivals such as Starbucks. And so that's sort of a quick thumbnail of a story that Dunkin' Donuts provides.
Yeah, well, Dunkin' Donuts is certainly an interesting organization. I mean, you can see they constantly are changing the name. I mean, now they're going to Dunkin', right? They're taking the donuts out to try to give it more of a different feel, right? It's not just about the donuts. When you think of their old marketing, it was always about the guy with the donuts. So it's very interesting that they've done that. The other corporate example you provided was Amazon. And so why don't you take a couple minutes to explain it, because they're fascinating in what they've done.
Well, Amazon, of course, started out as a and I has heard recently about somebody that was a suite mate of Amazon's founder, and how they had decided to take a look at purveying books, sale of books over the Internet, which was kind of an odd approach. But they started out with that in mind and have taken a network of users and through a variety of different means have expanded their base, both from a standpoint of users and a standpoint of products. And the kind of diversification that they've gone to has been a combination of both. And most recently, and the thing that excites, I think, all of us as we watch their future evolution, is their downward diversification. They have become a very sophisticated provider or purveyor of delivery services. And you see that has really helped them achieve their growth. And now you can acquire a product of a wide range of items. You can acquire it very rapidly through Amazon Prime on the computer, and you can order it and you get delivery in the next couple of days. And that's gotten a real edge over the big box firms that would require that you actually walk down to the store, look up the product, and hope that it's in stock, and then take it home. And the whole process there is one of inconvenience, as opposed to Amazon, where the product just arrives. Now, I live in the city, and it's very interesting to see that now these boxes of food arrive for the other residents of our high-rise on a daily basis, green boxes being delivered by Amazon. And it's incredible that people are now starting to order their menu items even faster than almost than you can place an order and get delivery from a fast food place. Amazon gives you an entire meal from your local outlet delivered right to your apartment or dwelling. And this is taken advantage of by students and others who seek this convenience in their exercise of their lives.
It is a fascinating story in your book also. Again, we're talking with Brooks Phenos. He has written a book called Corporate Diversification, Opportunities Created by the Winds of Change. You know, Brooks, I got to tell you, I've had an opportunity to look over your book, which you so graciously sent me. And what I liked about it is that it really gave some very simple and concrete tools and steps that people can look at and really go through. So again, I commend you on the simplicity of the book and the ease of use, which I think business leaders will really enjoy. You know, as we wrap up the show today, we've got about a minute and a half left. Tell me the one thing that you hope people get from your book.
Two things. One, the opportunities afforded by change, and two, the importance of taking advantage of those opportunities to stay ahead of others.
We're talking with Brooks Fino. His book, Corporate Diversification, Opportunities Created by the Winds of Change. It's available, of course, on Amazon. No pun intended to today's show. And, of course, you can go to hrpowerhour.com after this show. You'll be able to click on Brooks' information, be able to listen to this show, of course, again. And, of course, you'll be able to order his book directly from a link online. Brooks, I want to thank you so much for being our guest today.
Well, I thank you very much for giving the opportunity, so to speak.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VerylDana.com.
Hi, this is Tani Alvarez at VerylDana. Has your company recently audited its risk for joint employment liability? Do you use a third-party vendor for temporary work or otherwise use contract labor? Have you recently assessed whether you are using best practices to decrease possible liability as to joint employment? Things that should be considered in this analysis include the interrelationship of operations between the two entities, whether there is common ownership and financial control of the two entities, whether the two entities have common management, and whether there is centralized labor relations or centralized personnel. While each state has individualized standards to determine joint employment, these factors serve as the basis of many of the tests. To further assess your risk of joint employment, talk to a member of VerylDana's Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VerylDana.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.